You know what you're looking for. I try to tell you what you got to do. You may not be what you want to hear. But if you ask the question, then we can all discover about ourselves what we are. That way everybody discovers something that we can apply to themselves. And that's what a satsang is. A satsang is fellowship with truth. And the truth is the moment. The truth is where the truth is. How we got here and why we got here can be debated from now till eternity. But the fact is, we're in the room now. And that's what you have to recognize when you live in the truth. If you don't live in the truth, where are you living?
Falsehood?
No, you're living in the illusion of your fixation. There's no false truth. Truth is always truth. That's why there's no commandment, doctrine, not life. You can only live truth. And that is an experiential condition of love. Any part of out of the experience, then you're constantly debating about what didn't happen. That's very Catholic truth. So, it's very frustrating. When you begin to recognize what you're living, then nobody will kill you. So, here's your option. Last question. Or whatever you want. Take a picture. Something.
I don't know.
And
then,
who is Krishna? Is it the principle in a person? Remember that the Gopal is the name of the man who achieved Krishna consciousness. Jesus was the name of the man who achieved Christ consciousness. Gopal lived in Ayodhya, which is known as India, in the time of Arjuna. And Jesus lived in Jerusalem in the time of Peter and Herod. So, what the man is and what the accomplishment within the man are two different things. Now, at the lotus feet of Krishna, is Krishna a person or a principle? Good. Then where would the feet be located in the principle? Top of the head, because that's the highest point of reference your ego can make as a person looking to refer to a principle. If Ayadano is in the state of Krishna consciousness, Ayadano would be looking for Krishna consciousness where? At the bottom of my foot and the top of my head. there's no way to go inward to your creative consciousness other than to turn the eyes inward. If you turn your eyes inward, they're not located in your buttocks, they're located in the top of your head. And man is an upside down tree. So this is root. This is branch. So what would be the feet? Would be the base. That's what the feet would represent, the base. And lotus is that the highest emanation of an upward principle sitting there as a stool or a seat. And so in agricultural language, we tend to get lost in nebulous words. When we come into technical language, because agricultural language generates our guilt, and guile is the origin of guilt. To beguile oneself is to fool oneself, to feel immature and ignorant, and never going to measure up to anything. So you're stuck with your fixation. That's what agricultural language will do to you. When you break away from that cultural language and start looking at technological language, you discover only one thing: self-commitment to yourself. There is no guilt in technical language. There is no immaturity or feeling inferior. It is a commitment to yourself to finish what you start and what you say to yourself. So, looking inward, you take this perspective for the first time and see that Krishna, this is creative intelligence present in vibratory creation, anchored at the top of your brain, and it's the base where your five senses converge in order to observe and not analyze how you are locked in biologically with the physical frame to the electromagnetic processes constituting your existence. So each one of us has to have the experience to validate what they are. I can't live it for you. I can't drive the car for you. I can give you the key, but you gotta drive your own car. And even Jesus cannot live my life, and I can't live his. Because he would tell me in the first place, pick up your own cross and follow me. Because you can't pick, I can't pick up his cross. And what is his cross is, he has to go on Calvary to be nailed to exalt his Christ consciousness, or the God awareness in the vibratory function pattern. I have to exalt my own God awareness in coping with moment-to-moment struggles with this matter. And how I stick it out and survive it is a contribution to my creative consciousness within me. If I panic and I suicidally destroy myself, then I have lived out my allotment in the physical frame to validate the Christ. Equally, Gopal had to live out his own and his time to help Arjuna appreciate what he was doing. So when these men use these terms, they are all talking in ancient times agriculturally. When we bring it in today's language, we can apply it immediately without guilt or feeling immature. Creative intelligence present in the vibratory creation is referred to as Christ consciousness or Gopal consciousness or Krishna consciousness.
Thank you.
look at your structure. Where are your five senses located? Where are your two eyes? Where is your nose? Where are your ears, your mouth, and your sense of touch located? It's top of your head. Then if that's the top of the head, that's the base or the foot of the electromagnetic field, because why? The sperm and ovum bond is to form you. The lower part of your anatomy is the sperm and the upper part of your anatomy is the ovum. And where do they bond? At the hypothalamus medullus, known as the mouth of God in man. That's your electromagnetic input. So, for that matter, your whole electromagnetic field is centered in the top of your skull, between the pituitary, the hypothalamus, and the pineal. You can't go any place else because there's no other part of your anatomy that's going to resonate electromagnetically to be measured competent enough to affect the atoms in the environment by your voice. Your voice is your mouth, and it's located in your head. So if the principle already has set up the geometry, all the intellect can do is stop analyzing and we start allowing the mechanism to live the moment to moment. Otherwise the mechanism is only fooling itself. So, by and large, as Jesus will put it in his way, if I be lifted up, I draw all men unto me. That's a nice statement for those who want to go off into a nebulous region. And if you want to apply it and get the experience, it's very simple. If I, the five senses, be drawn up between the right and left brain of the intellect into the intuitive nature, independent of the five senses, all other forms of manifestation will be synchronized by virtue of what I say to it. I can't own the universe, but I have dominion over the universe by my voice. So if I say to the mountain move, it has to move, because I and the mountain are one and the same atom. But I have to rise above the five senses through the intellect back to my intuitive nature, independent of my senses, to control that process by being honest with myself. Each one of us has this particular capability, but not each one of us is willing to make the journey. Now, each one of us fall under two categories, the passenger consciousness or the driver consciousness. The passenger consciousness is a something for nothing attitude, trying to tell the driver how to drive the car. I never see a passenger that can drive a car yet. But the driver who gets behind the wheel has to be responsible for making sure that he don't create no accident. And that's what the initiate is versus the non-initiate. That's what the disciple is versus the non-disciple. One who disciplines himself, this is the five senses, in order to transcend the analytical function of the intellect to gain the control of mastery of the intuition, the independence of the senses, to monitor the atoms by the spoken voice. That's why it gets tougher when you get initiated. Before you initiated, all your sins are forgiven you. After you initiated, you pay for it. So don't go get initiated too fast. Don't buy a car before you learn to drive it. Now that's all initiation is, to give you the car and give you the key to it and let you drive down your road. Now if you don't know the rules of the road, I can't help you. But I can only vouch for you if the cosmic policeman stop you and give you a ticket. See? That's the name of the game. So that's where they say, if I be lifted up, I draw all men unto me. But if not, somebody outside, your own self, you have to confront and raise up. You got to transcend the five senses and the intellect in order to merge with the intuition. Now, but Christ consciousness or Krishna consciousness is not the end of the journey. That's the start of the journey. the next step that's more challenging. Krishna consciousness, or the Christ consciousness, operates in the world of manifestation. While I'm in the world, I'm the light of the world. To be in the world or not of the world, the first one was said by Jesus, and the second one was said by Krishna, Gopal, to Krishna. Now, to put that in proper context, when you transcend your five senses and the intellect with your intuition, you have control of the waking state in the atomic man. And the next step is to gain control of the jet state or invisible state outside of the planetary creation. That level is referred to. In my father's house, there are many mansions. If it were not, I'd tell you so. I'd go to prepare a place. That part is outside of the planetary creation. So Christ consciousness, or Gopal consciousness, or Krishna consciousness, or the creative intelligence within the planetary creation also works through its creation to transcend the manifested universe. For two reasons. One, to validate I and the Father are one. Two, you see me, you see the Father. Meaning, God isn't sitting on a throne waiting for dead people. He's already at the tip of your nose and in your heart as the living breath. And if you don't relate to it by recognizing it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you ain't loving it. There's no room for it. If you think it's easy, that's the prospect. Most teachers will tell their students to go meditate and pray, but they'll chastise them for falling asleep. They never criticize them for anything else. They can make all the other mistakes in the world, they'll forgive them. For falling asleep, they can't forgive them. It's like falling asleep at the wheel. And who's going to forgive you for that? Now you know why you have to start up at the lotus and recognize Krishna's feet.
Once they get started using the tree with the limbs at the ribs at the top, how did that come about? They're using that analogy.
Man is an upside down tree. The roots are the hair. Now, do you know that your hair grows long when the humidity is high and it shrinks and the humidity is low? Isn't that an interesting phenomenon? As the same of the plants, it is roots in the ground. When the humidity is high, what happens to the roots?
You get longer.
Good. And when the humidity is low?
They dry up.
Good. Now, if that phenomenon is operating in the external world inversely, then man is an upturned tree. therefore your hair is interacting electromagnetically to the environment. That's why it's an antenna. And you can use it if you understand its operation in many different ways. But then, for those who don't know, the hair is a parasite. Now, what's the function of a parasite?
To latch onto a host.
Yes. So, when the wise man decided to take the vow of commitment, what did he do to his hair?
Cut it off.
Because he didn't want to be left. So he knew the principle underlying it, so he made that particular sacrifice.
Is that why they leave it after that particular time when they're a novice? Is why they let it grow and
that's it?
They don't cut it.
Okay. No. But when you realize yourself, you have an optional condition. You can let it grow or not, when you realize it.
Right? No. But you're not there.
Not at that. So I met two brothers once of a great master whose name was Shivananda. He was a contemporary of Yogananda. And we met in Dallas. These two disciples were students of this teacher, Shivananda. The one who inherited the organization, his name was Chittananda. And the other one, who was traveling around, gathering up disciples, his name was Shivananda. And they invited one, Nitty Gritty, for a lecture in Texas. Well, you know, Nitty Gritty's a joker. He walked in and he said, "Gentlemen, you know, hear these two fellows talk about God." So this is how they greet each other. Shivananda said to Chittananda, "Hello, brother. I see, by the grace of God, you are still maintaining a short set of hair on your head." And Chittananda said, "Yes." "And I see, by the grace of God, you are maintaining a long stretch of hair on your head." And Shivananda says, "Yes, because our teachers decided one had to be long and one had to be short." Shivananda's hair is long and black, and Chittananda is very short, but with short. I think he cut off his hair to take the vow. And that's when they entered the ashram. At a time to study, Shivananda was a taxi driver and he was here and never wanted to cut his hair for nobody. So he asked Shivananda, "If I ever become a disciple, can I keep my hair?" And Shivananda said, "Providing you make it." So he had to work pretty hard to get to enlightenment with a long hair. See, the body is like a tree upside down. Now, the sap of the tree goes where? Good. Now, if you're upside down, where is the energy that would incorporate the creative intelligence move to? To the toe or to the head? You're an upside down tree now. Okay. Anybody in this room practice photography? Nobody practice photography, no? You know the original camera, when you line up and look at the object you want to photograph, and you look through, what do you see?
Upside down.
How they got that big? Then what you're looking here is not an optical illusion. Everybody is sitting on their head. Aren't you all sitting on our head here? We've been proud and we sit in somewhere else. Comedy is this whole optical illusion. That's how the yogis said they think it's a big Maya. It's an illusion by which we delude ourselves in it until we break out of it into the atomic process. So you don't know that until technical instruments are developed to validate what the yogis are saying in their context. So it's very interesting that when they write up their information, they're writing it in agricultural language, and if you were to take it literally like that, you'd get fixated and lost in it. Guarantee that. You have to approach it in a certain context and then look at the technical evaluation before you say you understand what it is. Creative intelligence setup is entire jigsaw puzzle with a 144 elements. It's called existence. They're totally useless in a stationary state. You and I don't exist yet. But what we are is existing there, the 144 elements, in a stationary, stagnant state. Now, creative intelligence can play no game to make it valid. If it says, come, let me make a manifestation in my image, where would this principle go? No. You can't do nothing at once. You have to have what? No, polarity. So you have to have opposite. So that's why it says, come let us. Not come let me. Let me is one. Let us is what? Two or more. Now if you look at yourself, are you the result of one sperm? Or the result of one ovum? Or the result of a sperm and an ovum? Or the result of two sperm or two ovum? You're one of each, totally distinctly opposing. And that is what we are, a reflection of the principle of the 144 elements set into momentum. The moment it stated, come let us make something, it took elements out of a stagnant, static state and moved it into a state of momentum. And momentum is mind. You don't have no mind. Can you show it to me to try? But if you don't move those 144 elements to vibrate, you and I will be here. Get a lot to talk to each other. So 99% of the principle is momentum called mind over matter. Matter is only 1% of 144 elements. Therefore, the greatest game of delusion of this big illusion of the who's and the who's are allowed to continue. Because the what is the 1%, and the who is the 99%. So therefore there can be no other way to trigger momentum but by talking to it. For that reason, it's called placebo in the scientific terminology, or it might be called prayer unceasingly, suggestion, or any kind of a verbalization, input programming to trigger momentum in the mass. We are given the opportunity in the 144 elements to experience momentum, which is called mind, and play the game of sonic resonance on the 144 elements, talking to itself. And every possible phenomenon is possible of sonic resonance on the 144 elements. Raising the dead, feeding the 4,000, 5,000, walking across the lawn, they're all possible in the momentum of the 144 elements. There is no miracle to be barred. But here's a strange phenomenon. The 144 elements are encased in a frame called body. And then they cut the cord after it's born. And if it breathes, you keep it. If it don't breathe, you throw it back into the garbage. You start all over again. Now if you're all lying down dead in this room, and God walks and says, "Hi folks, what do you want? About to perform miracles, the possessions to make you the richest person in the world, or your breath back?" You're going to ask. Good. Then you can play all the hues and the game in momentum. Now you see why they can't have a commandment out of that life. Because you're allowed to lie to yourself in order to play the game. It's called suggestion, programming, or whatever you want to label it. Because you literally have to trigger the momentum by verbalization. So the person who walks over the fire, does he talk himself up to the level where he feels that the fire can't burn him? Then you see what momentum is, then you see what mind is. Mind is momentum in terms of resonance. You talk yourself to you. The greatest gift you got. You hear it, son? Good. Enjoy. And here is an interesting phenomenon. You will place all your confidence in the strength of a word, wishing that it would never collapse. Funny phenomenon. All the things around you are geometrical shapes, and you'll have to use the alphabet to label it. And the alphabet will make a word in order to identify the geometry. And you'll use a number to identify the quantity. But you're swearing a stack of Bibles that a chair, which is a word, is something that you can sit on and not fall through. Sit at that sit up. Then which part of the chair do you blame now? Which part of the word you blame? The actual object that collapses or the word in your brain that you call fear? And you get angry enough to kick the object to get even for letting you down. But you can never kick the chair. In your mind, going on inside, you still got an alphabet and a geometry and a number letting you get what? Angry? Maybe. Now why we live in this particular process, it's called Maya or relativity, and it's beautiful because it would never work if it was not set up by them. That's why God is his own devil. Because if he's everywhere, how the heck did the devil get a chance to be there? So he'd have to be his own devil. He'd have to be his own testing of principles. If he's any kind of a scientist or creative principle, to make anything and find out if it has any value, certainly he's going to test it. You would, I would. How do you test it? Pushing it to the point of breaking. That's how we measure in the ratio of quality, the greatest quality. Now we know we have some kind of a evaluation. But when you look at it in scientific terminology, there is no feeling of guilt. If you look at it in agricultural terminology, there's always a feeling of guilt and inferiority. But in scientific terminology, there's no such thing. All that is in our scientific terminology is a sense of commitment to live out what you say. It makes you realize what you are versus who you are. Therefore, no one can be your teacher. You are your own teacher. You are you, guru. But a guru is a you rug. Everybody who wants a guru will find somebody you're going to walk all over in the end. You walk all over yourself in the end, getting rid of your ego. You ever walk on your ego? Try it sometime. Lots of fun. So, if someone was a guru, they should take up your cross to you. But I don't know of any guru picking up the other person's cross. Every guru that I heard of always pick up your own cross. What guru is the guru? You are the guru yourself, so you pick up your own pride. And you pick up your own responsibility. And so, if you listen to Frank Sinatra singing his song, I did it my way. There ain't no better way to do it than your own way. No matter how long it takes to do it, do it your own way. Because that's the truth about the whole thing in the end. I can't eat to you. And for the back of you, I can only do it to myself.
No, I don't actually
you're always going to do it your way, you know why? The fact that you believe it is your way. Even though you may think you've been making references to my words that you hear, you ain't doing it my way. You are always going to do it your way. Your sense of familiarity of your mechanism allows you to do it your way. The instructions may appear to come from another person's voice, but it isn't going to go into your mechanism to be the other person doing it to you. It is you who will do it your way. You may listen to the instructions, you may want to attempt to fulfill them, but you still bring it your way in regardless of how clumsy or how practical it is. It is still you who do it. There is a story where a man was kind of big parcel on top of his back, and it was very heavy, and he went looking around for a relief. Finally he found a temple where Shiva was sitting, statue. So he came up to the statue and he prayed, "Oh Lord Shiva, how I'd love to dump this load and carry something lighter." And he prayed and prayed, and then all of a sudden the statue opened his eyes and said, "Pick up anyone you want." So he was so happy to hear the statue, "Oh God, this is great." All around him was a pile of packages. So Matthew put up his, and he looked for the smallest one to lift up. After 4 hours, he finally found one that he could lift up. It was the one he brought. That's why nobody can do good. Though you may feel incompetent, that feeling of incompetency is only the programming of your sense of identity with your individuality. If you realize your carbon dioxide is my oxygen coming into my nose right now, and my carbon dioxide is your oxygen going into your nose, who the oxygen belongs to? You know, we'd go bankrupt if we suddenly unbuckle all the oxygen in the air. We take it for granted, we walk around keeping going like that. You know, that's the biggest gas plant going on. You talk about the Persian oil, this is the Persian gas. If we don't have it to breathe, we ain't got anything there. But Uncle Reagan needs income tax, so we give him back his money at the end of each year. But God got the income bread, he got to give him his tax back. So we are forced to recognize our breath as the only principle going on inside of us. And it's actually us. Breath is us. And yet, I'm wasting it away talking with it. To who? Myself. Listening in your ears, through your body, asking me questions. Well, who is asking me questions? Myself is asking me questions in your form. And I'm answering myself back through my form to myself in your form. Because we're both together, same thing. Two things equal to the same thing, we're full of hot air. Now you see what we are? The biggest hot air balloon in the universe. And each one of us is like a little hose. Good. One consolation. If ever you feel that to think your particular lot is inferior to what others are seeking to do. If not, you wouldn't be given that particular horoscope, the scope of the horror, to live. If that was not your role to work on this system, much less everyone in this room having their own particular role to deal. Each one of us here is playing the role. But you know something about the horoscope? It's 50-50. 50% of the time it's minus, and 50% of the time it's plus. And so set up though, that we break even from the time you start to the time you finish. But it's not sequential to how the minus and the plus are to be experienced. They're set up in a random way so that you can't get a big part equal. We're always at the compassionate gesture of the greatest intelligence of the earth. But you're going to break even. And that spiritual laughter is, you never go to sleep no more, right up to midnight eternity. It's called the resurrection. So, Brother Jesus and all the rest came to show us that they only recognize that the caterpillar is doing it before them. Never going to find a rotten butterfly, you're going to find a rotten caterpillar. And you're not going to find realized state rotting. But sometimes they aggravate us by leaving nobody to examine and let Christians out there that have been able. That for sure that we have nothing other than the army in different states of momentum. But the more we play the game and not panic about it, the more we reach the oxygen. For him that overcome it, I will not stand for the second time, and I make him a pillar in the house of the Lord. That's a pledge from the creative intelligence. Any being, male or female, who overcomes what? The ability to act for your faith. Anytime you master that, you don't have to go back and do the game the second time. And so the scope of the horror is the 50% of the time is minus, 50% of the time is plus. And if you don't panic, you won't break even and come out of that. So, welcome aboard to the biggest movie game. By the Eastern man called it Maya or illusion. And Krishna would call it, this is the world, W-H-I-R-L. Be in the world, W-O-R-L-D, but not in the W-H-I-R-L. So to be in the world and not in the world is what it is. No one gets caught up with it. Nebulousness of it. Or the who. Function in the what you are. And Paul made the same discovery when he said, I rebuke you in your rejoicing, because people are really rejoicing that they pull off miracles and have all kinds of magical things happen. Then he's saying, I rebuke you, I confront you, this is not doing that. Because I live and die daily in the Lord. He knew his nose was more important Isn't that where living and dying is going on all the time?
In, you live, out, you don't come back, it's over.
Very simple. If it comes back in, you live it. If it goes out, you've got no guarantee to come back in. That's all. That's what it's called, living and dying in the Lord. It's too simple. It's too obvious. How many of us really are conscious of that particular moment, the moment, function of the incoming breath? Even if you try for 10 minutes to watch your breath, some idea will pop up in your mind to make you wander off into something else. And you're going to want to analyze it. You're going to want to let it happen. Or something will come along to aggravate you, to take you out of your beautiful people state, to get you to move. You see why creative intelligence has no intention to go out of business before the night eternity? He needs us to play the game. He needs us to play this big illusion. Because if we sit down and really watch our nose for 24 hours, 7 days a week, he's out of business. We'd all be totally realized. But if we can't do it, because why? It's him himself playing his own game, so he's not going to allow us, in our little ego, to get the upper hand. That's why Jesus said, when he was in the body now, that is, he said, not my will, but thy will be done. We're stuck. But once you understand it, you can play the game. If you don't understand it, you can't play the game. Choice is, do you choose to play the game or not? What do I realize? You shook your head. You didn't think clearly.
Well,
that is because you play the game. That's why you're alive, you're a winner. The sperm that got to the ovum is a winner, therefore it chose to play the game. Losers can't be born. You know the loser sperm being born? Then everyone in this room are winners, and everyone in this room is playing. Because there's no other game to play. There's no other opportunity to play the game. Because it could be worse. Never to have been created to experience. Now, you know what is the greatest joy of the creator, to the creator, is to be created to experience now. Now it's all we got. We don't have a single thing outside of now. Every instant of now is the most intense moment of love. Because God loves his own self so much, he decided to crystallize as us now. But he gives us individuality, making us feel we are so important, knowing fully doggone well it's himself playing the now as us, and leading us to feel immature, insignificant, and have to reach up to him when he himself is playing this particular game himself, to entertain himself. That's why he says, come, let us make a manifestation in our own image and likeness. That means a kind of fear of happy game. But then he gives us some kind of a freedom or individuality. Go forth multiply and have dominion over the universe. No, set up no franchise, you gotta figure out from here.
So you see, we come out here loving and stuff. Male, female, playing the game of dominion. Sounds like dominoes. Well, if you ever had a domino effect, you know what it means.
We are fortunate, though, to have the opportunity to experience this wonderful form out of the 144 elements and to be endowed with the individuality to talk to ourselves. You know something? It's all right to talk to yourself, but don't move your lips. Because the next door neighbor will think you crazy. Imagine you sitting down in a restaurant talking to yourself. Or the waitress is going to say, or the manager is going to say, you better call it. Booby wagon. You got one nut head over there. You see? But that's the fun of it. If you want to talk to yourself, live in your house. Nobody will bug you. But if somebody wants to bug you because you're talking to yourself in the public, you can say, I am obeying the law of God. I am praying on secretly. Nobody can prevent me from praying on secretly. This is my divine right. Therefore, if I talk, my lips move and you don't understand my language, too bad for you. I'm praying on secretly. And if you want to make it a little dramatic, the person comes over and says, madam, we don't like what you're doing. You're trying to meet customers. We speak English, you can answer them and say, Pandora Potatoes, now I'm not one to now to the Dova to the Yahoo. Y'all speak him out. Because he wouldn't understand what the hell you were saying, but you pray to your God in whatever sound you want to make go out of your mouth. Then he may have to go call Mother Maria to come and talk to you in Latin. You see what I mean? So each person's fixation is their own trap. You can get out of the trap and enjoy it by understanding what you say to yourself all the time. Therefore, you're allowed to talk to yourself, even if it's in the public, as long as the person who's listening don't comprehend. But if they comprehend, then they have to challenge you more. Yes, no, maybe. You don't control your thoughts. And yet at the same time, you have some degree of control in the form of synchronicity that they flow through you. And you integrate in a synchronous way to feel that you're in control. But because of this principle of momentum is so fast, the brain gets the illusion that it's regulated. Now, when you started off to talk, every word was repeated many times to be important to you. After you know to talk, you notice the words were going out of you very fast in reference to what you were going to say. And the more you seem competent in communicating what you want to say, the the faster the words move out of you, after a while it seems to be like an ongoing tape recording. There's hardly any rational thinking for the words. It's moving so fast, yet it's collectively valid in its projection, that the listener is highly impressed with the compilation of words to the understanding that is coming through from the speaker to them. That's where your brain is computing now. You are the cellular computer. Can't be there before you start up. You got a problem with you. Can you remember the first time when the door actually made its impression on your brain? When they say go through the door and you look at it opening in the wall and it really made its impression that that opening meant the door? And when most words that were repeated to you as a child actually synchronize geometrically to the valid for you to function. Everyone passes through that state at some point in their early childhood. Then 3 seconds and a door is a door. And your parents will say to you for many years while you're growing up, go through the door as if walking through it like a mechanical object, till one day, and you hear the words go through the door, the opening in the wall, and the resonance of the words seems to lock it for the first time. And then you get your first experience with understanding. Prior to that, you have to have a little object being led by the truth. Like a dog, you can't immediately learn to jump up to catch something. You have to repeat it over and over, then finally it will respond. Don't get fooled with the statements that all the teachers talk about, that there are magical conditions for awareness of God. Not true. Awareness is dependent on air to breathe. If you don't breathe, you can't be aware. And they're not going to keep you after 20 minutes if you don't breathe. So I'm sure you're right, the air is very important as far as this mechanism is concerned. And awareness is a very funny function. If you're sound asleep, do you know if you're a man or a woman? Now, by the same token, do you have a guarantee you're going to wake up next week? Then don't you see how vulnerable you are to the word that you tell yourself you're going to go to sleep? Trust it? Who wants to trust a word like that? You got no guarantee it's going to tell you to wake up. Do you tell yourself you're going to wake up tomorrow and you're going to sleep tonight? You didn't tell yourself to wake up today? Last night? Everybody tells themselves what they're going to do next day before they fall asleep. I don't know if anybody tells themselves that. If you don't tell yourself what you're going to do, and you fall asleep, and you don't wake up, we know you goofed up. You didn't set the computer right. But as long as you set the computer, you got to wake up to go and hear a dinosaur talk tonight, you're going to wake up today. You see? It's not like our friend who go over to the bank and somebody tell him to be there and the person wasn't there, right?
Right.
These are things we're talking about programs. We live at a very, very minute point of the interaction with the dependency on the solid of the world. Our whole life, our whole mechanism is trusted in a word. Going to bed and telling oneself you're going to wake up to go tomorrow. Give you an example. Let's say today the two of us go to the grocery store and bought some flour, raisins, sugar, and butter, and some fruit, and say to ourselves, we will make a cake with the group so that they can eat it tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. That's just today. So we go to the store at 10 o'clock this morning. We bought all the stuff. But we're not going to bake the cake until tomorrow, 10 o'clock. So we bought all the stuff today. And we said goodbye, and I see you tomorrow and come and help you make the cake. If I show up tomorrow, you make the cake. If I don't show up, you're going to wonder what happened. And as the time gets closer to 8 o'clock, and the cake is not made, what are you going to do? You're going to panic, or you're going to hurry to make the cake?
I would have made it at 10 after 10.
Good. But then, you can't eat it before 8 o'clock, right? And if I show up at 6 o'clock, I said, sorry, I didn't get here fast enough. You bake the cake. Is it baked already? You still got 2 hours. And you say, yes. Then we bake the cake. But then you said, the cake smells so good. You want to taste a piece of it? Or you want to wait till 8 o'clock to eat it? Oh, you said that. Go ahead and eat the cake right now because you never know if 8 o'clock will come. That's what I'm talking about. You see? There's a story like that. There's a fellow by the name of Sam. One named Hari, and the other name was Hamid. And all of them were wonderful fellows. Sam was a Jewish boy, and Hari was a Christian boy, and Hamid was Islam. And they played golf and did all other things. And one day they had a big piece of cake, and they were on a trip in the woods. So they didn't want to eat the cake right away because they figured it was too good to waste the week. So they said to each other, if we go to bed tonight and the person who wakes up with the best dream will get first share of the cake. They all agreed. They went to bed at night. And they were all having wonderful dreams. Around 3 o'clock in the morning, Sam can't sleep, he's so hungry. So he looked around, and he sees his two buddies talking to sleep, groaning and laughing in their sleep, having wonderful dreams. And he is full of shivers, but hungry and tired. And there's the cake in a little bag, and so he decided, well, what the heck, I eat the cake. So he got the cake and got the cake. Next morning everybody woke up, and they saw Sammy still sleeping, and he's shaking up in the lake. Yes. So the one that didn't bring the cake. So Sam said, well, what you guys have? What kind of dreams do you have? So Harry said, what do you have? He was in Peter, beautiful place in heaven, and all the wonderful things that God has showered upon them, he was there enjoying this beautiful dream of Jupiter. Sam says, man, that's a great dream. I wish I had a dream like that. And then he looks to Ahmed. He says, Ahmed, what kind of dream you had? He says, oh, I was with Muhammad last night, and we were on the other side of heaven and paradise, and the beautiful skies and all the trees and plants, everything. And this dream was so fantastic. Sam says, oh, I wish I had a dream like that. Then the two of them, Ahmed and Ari, left him. What's that? What kind of dream did you have? What kind of nightmare did you have? He said, man, I had a rough dream. A rough dream? He said, yeah. You know, I'm Jewish. He said, yeah, you know, I can't be condemned Moses. Oh, no, naturally not, because I've got to follow the Ten Commandments. I was so miserable, being so hungry. Moses came and said, what the hell, you don't eat the cake? So you know what I did? That was my dream. If you don't find none in the bag, it's because I can't put in more things. So we can't live tomorrow, we can only live what? This goes on with us all the time. We've got so many different illusions of what this time frame is versus the living in the now. That's basically what we have to learn about health. It's the time frame now. You're welcome. Religion is just the answer. There are hundreds of them all over the world. But the actual living of truth is practicality. You're a moment to moment confrontation with yourself. That's where truth is. How practical you are every moment. All the truth in the world. The moment you're in practical, you're living in illusion. Because the impracticalness will let you down, and then you hurt yourself the way you're doing. So, there's a story about the practicalness and hurting oneself. There was a pope who was praying for rain to stop. And while praying, the water came up to his knees. And along came a boat with some people and said, Father, save yourself. And he said, no, my children, you go save others. I'm praying to the Lord to stop the rain. then the rain kept on falling, and the water came up to his chest. And then another boat came along. I said, "Father, save yourself." And he said, "No, my son, you go look for others and save them, because I am praying to the Lord to stop the rain." Then the rain got more heavy and the water came up to his nose. By that time a helicopter came along, threw down a ladder, and said, "Father, save yourself." And he shouted, "No, my children, you go save others. I am praying to the Lord to stop the rain." And after a while he's standing next to God. And God said, "Where you are?" "So you keep working on a helicopter."
Another Albert, Arnold Palmer joke.
Well, there was one time Moses and Jesus were in heaven. And they were kind of bored up there because there's nobody but them. So they decided to come down and play golf. So when they came down, there was a golf course now. They're near a pond, and Moses and Jesus to fall in the sea. He said, "Okay, play." So Jesus puts down the ball, picks up a 5-iron, and he's about to strike the ball when Moses says, "You can't do it with a 5-iron." And Jesus looks at him and says, "Arnold Palmer did it." And he whacks the ball, and the ball went right into the pond. And Moses is angry, but he says, "Okay, I'll go get the ball." So he walks over to the pond, washed the water, picked up the ball, poured it the water, and then said, "Play." And the man sees it, and he just took the ball in the tree. And again he picks up the 5-iron to hit the ball. And Moses says, "You can't hit it to the 5-iron. Jesus looked up and said to him, "Arnold Palmer did it." And he whacked the ball, and the ball falls all against the pond. At that time Moses said, "I'm going to go for this time." The next time I go for it. He walked over to the pond, washed the water, they cut the ball, pulled it back, and kind of took it. Next time he would go for it. Put the ball down. And again, he reaches out for the 5-iron to hit the ball, and Moses said, "I told you you can't." And Jesus said, "Arnold Palmer did it," and he hits the ball, and the ball falls into the pond again. So Moses said, "I ain't going for it." So Jesus said, "Okay." So he walks to the pond, walks in the water. By that time, two other people come along to play golf. And they see this fellow walking on the water. And they turn to Moses and said, "Who the hell that guy think he is? Jesus Christ?" Moses says, "No, he thinks he's Arnold Palmer."
I like that.
Moses can part the water, Jesus can walk with this. Arnold Palmer can hit the ball with a 5-iron. Everybody's got something they can do. That's the whole name of the game. That's what we're talking about. What truth is, in terms of being practical, not just the answer. A practical action is any action that doesn't leave you dead after 2 seconds. Now you know what a practical action is.
know, it leaves you dead, you know, the time. There was a butcher who had a cow, and he was taking it to the slaughterhouse to kill it. The cow broke away and ran behind some trees, and there behind the trees he saw a monk meditating. The cow said to the monk, "Please, sir, save my life, so I can carry me to this position, slaughterhouse or something." So the monk says, "All right, hide behind these bushes." But after a while, along came the butcher looking for his cow. And he saw this monk meditating. So he ventured up to ask the monk if he saw the cow. Well, the monk can't betray the cow because he gave the word, and he can't lie to the butcher because he is adhering to truth. So he looked straight at the butcher and he said, "Friend, they that saw your cow cannot tell you where it's hidden. He who could tell you where your cow is hidden didn't see it. And if you know the answer to that, you'll find your cow." To this day, the book is still a book of cow. Let's see if you can find your cow. Repeat for the monks of the kitchen. They that saw the cow cannot tell you where the cow is hidden. And he who could tell you the cow is hidden didn't see it. Now you didn't lie and didn't betray. What do you think?
It sounds good. It sounds like that.
What do you think? You're not joking.
Oh, yeah.
You're joking. Then you have the answer. That was bad. You want to repeat it, though?
But they can't talk. And he who can talk is the tongue. There's only one. So it doesn't speak. See how smart you are? But she wasn't started to be. You have to check it out. See how it goes. Yeah?
On the cellular level, on the atomic level, they can see.
But he was being direct with his words enough to make the butcher check into the words himself and see if he could solve it, the problem. The words can do that. You're dealing with words. What we call satsang in the Sanskrit terminology is what we're doing right here in this moment. Fellowship with truth. Getting together to relate to now. And now being God, and somebody sitting on a throne waiting for you to get there, you're not going to find him sitting there either. He's stupid to do this. Who wants to sit down and wait for dead people? So. And he's only got time for you because he creates you and he's at the tip of your nose. So you see, that's true. He has no other time for his creation other than the one. Therefore, for that reason, your breath is all you have. And all the programming will not add one iota to the breath. You only got so many ounces going in and out. The life of everybody. You wait a certain weight before they cut the cord. And after they cut the cord, you wait 3.5 ounces more. And before you phase out of this body, you can weigh you. And when you stop breathing, you're going to wait 3.5 ounces less. For where and for who does the 3.5 ounces belong to or go? And what did the 3.5 ounces do in the first place for you? Every one of us have a soul, because it is impossible to ask your body to feel. But then you do breathe the air in, and call it gut, and you do constrict and dilate in time with it. You keep you. And you are satisfied living individual. You may want to live yourself in possession of many different things. But in actuality, you are nothing but, including me, living story. What is the sort of place that you have got besides you standing on holy ground? Half of the four elements, right here. Totally holy. There is no such thing as a holy God or a holy God. It's living this, living story. And you and I are living story. Then we do. Don't breathe here in our 44 elements sitting here in silent state. That's what we are. So we don't want to use it. And when we do breathe in this vehicle, we are told to build me a temple that I may dwell in the midst thereof. Isn't that kind of a money joke? Your group will be told to get a better, but it's this principle of me can be decided. And it's highly impossible for you to do anything when you're found asleep. You begin to see how erroneous and ridiculous this whole process is in terms of confronting yourself. But if you don't panic, then you clean up your act. That's why they say cleanliness is next to godliness. I don't put it this way, cleanliness is godliness. The healthier you are, the more you respect your identity with the Creator and Savior. Because that's all you have. Breath of life. The breath of life is not optical. It's resonant. You can't see it, but you hear it. But you're deciding inside of this level of stuff that you can see with your eyes if you're awake. On the street, on the side of your head, and you don't know who you are, what to do with your body. And if you don't wake up, and you still don't know who you are, where you think you're going to be. Do you see the big illusion of not knowing and thinking you're going to know inside of yourself where you don't even know who you are on the street? Now the Guru has been telling us a lot of things, and I'm questioning.